Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
All right, so we're going to start this off with more of a statistic than actual news, but Nikki Javala just tweeted this out. It's both fascinating and horrifying all at once. She tweeted, it's been 22 years since the Commanders won a road game right after the bye. The last time it took place, week 5, 2002, they defeated the Titans 31-14 at the Coliseum.
Yeah, Patrick Ramsey was a quarterback that day, I believe. I mean, what does that mean? It's so many different coaches, and, you know, typically out of the bye week, you should be more prepared. I mean, they just haven't had good teams. That's the reason, more than anything else.
That is the reason, but I just felt like that stat, when you put that out on paper, or in this case, on social media, and you read 22 years since the last road win.
How many? I mean, I don't know how many games that is. How many games after the bye have been on the road versus home?
She does not have that in the team. Yeah. Because that is a good point to bring up, but 22 years is a long time.
I mean, it might be, I just guess that it's half of them, but I have no idea. Do you know that there was a year, and I'm trying to think, it was 93 or 94. That there were two byes, that they tested two bye weeks.
I did not know that.
Let me see if it's 95. Maybe it was 93.
Were those 16-game seasons?
Yeah, it was the Pettibone year. It was 93. Games. Two bye weeks. They tested that. 16 games with two bye weeks, so 18, you know, NFL Sundays like we have now. But they had... And by the way, they played on the road in both of them and lost after the bye week. So they were 0-2 that year on the road after their bye week. They lost to Miami and Buffalo after their bye week in 93. But yeah, for one season, they tested two bye weeks. I think that was the only season. It could have been another one, but I think that was the season that they tested it. Maybe they did it in 92 also. Did they do it in 92? No, just 93. 1 year, two bye weeks, which is what we will likely get when they move to an 18-game regular season. You'll get more likely than not two bye weeks. And the season will stretch over 20 regular season weeks. I know that people say, be careful, saturation, too much, you know, all of a sudden. I don't know, man, if you could ever have too much of this product.
Yeah, that would also land for regular folks, not you and I, but for regular folks, that would land the Super Bowl on President's Day weekend, so you would then get the day off work after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's, I think the goal is eventually for the Super Bowl Sunday to be President's weekend, so everybody's got a holiday on that Monday. Yes, that would be nice. And I think that would be... I know this. The NFL with an 18-game schedule does not want to start the season on Labor Day weekend. They feel like that is not an advantage for them. Too many people traveling, too many people away. They used to start, there was a stretch there after they went to 16 games in 1978, I believe it was, where they started the NFL season on Labor Day weekend. I think the Skins and Cowboys opened up, you know, once or twice on Labor Day Monday night football. But I don't think they want to start at Labor Day. So I think it works out where 20 regular season weeks, the playoffs as currently structured, would land the Super Bowl on President's Day weekend most years, or maybe every year. All right, what else?
There also might be something with the college where college football has the right to Labor Day weekend Sunday. I don't know.
They don't have that right for Labor Day weekend. They actually don't. There's no none of the TV, the FCC stuff or antitrust stuff requires the NFL to avoid Labor Day weekend. It requires them to avoid Friday nights, although they got around it with the Brazil game. Friday nights and then Saturdays during high school and college football season.
Yeah, Saturdays until this weekend. This is the final weekend with Army-Navy. And then
Exactly. But next weekend, we don't have Saturday football. Next weekend we do.
We
got the doubleheader.
Yeah, correct.
We'll have a triple header the following Saturday. Still no news on whether or not Washington's going to be moved into that spot. I think they have to provide that this week because we are technically 2 weeks away from that game. I thought it was 14 days, and I thought they would do it before. We might get that news later today or tomorrow on which of those games will get moved. I don't know. They might actually be waiting for some of the results this weekend to make sure they get the matchups they want, because some of these teams could play their way in or play their way out. But anyway, all right, what else?
Some gambling news. For the first time in 33 games, that's over two full seasons, the Panthers are favored in a game. They're favored over the Dallas Cowboys.
It's crazy.
It's nuts. I think Dallas might be the side.
I don't know. How many games? How many years is it?
It was two full seasons, 33 total games.
Wow. It's a long time not to be a favorite in the NFL, given how, you know, how changeable the NFL is week to week, year to year, month to month, whatever, but really week to week. And the Panthers are 2-point favorites now over the Cowboys Sunday. The Panthers have been playing really good football. They have been playing excellent football and certainly could have, you know, could have had more wins than these last three close losses. Which they had to Kansas City, Tampa, and then to the Eagles on Sunday. I mean, since Bryce Young came back and started playing after that Washington game, Carolina's been tough. I mean, there were people that thought Dave Canales was a good hire. You know, certainly a good, you know, offensive guy, good quarterback guy. You know, we were thinking earlier in the season that Tepper might, you know, unload him, which would have been coach number 7 or 8 in like 4 years or 5 years. What else?
So you talked a lot about Bill Belichick today. Well, according to reports, there was a lot of money increased in the NIL package. The rumor was that the UNC NIL package would go from $4 million per season to $20 million per season in an effort to court Bill Belichick. He obviously is the coach there now. No word if that number specifically has been confirmed, but we talked about this over the past 2 days. What is Bill Belichick bringing? Well, he's bringing money to the program, and a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, good for him. We'll see how it goes. It's like if you're in North Carolina, if you are a Tar Heel, you know what runs through your blood. Hoops does. And that is so far and away the number one is, can we get to the Final Four and win a national championship? And can we beat Duke twice? You know, beating Duke in Coach K's final game a few years ago, and then, and by the way, in Cameron Indoor, and then beating them again in the Final Four, that was one of the great months in the history of North Carolina basketball, and they've had them. That is just number one. It doesn't mean you can't be great in both. Ohio State have been great, you know, at the same time in both. Oklahoma, Texas has been. You know, what other schools? Arizona, UCLA. You know, there have been schools that have been really good simultaneously in both sports. But Carolina's never reached that upper echelon. See if they can do it. They certainly should have enough money with that alum base to do what they want to do, I would imagine. What's he getting paid? $10 a year? $10 million
allegedly
a year?
Allegedly $10 million per year.
Yeah. All right.
How about some NBA news? Apparently Jimmy Butler wants out of Miami. He was the face of Heat culture for a couple of years, and now he wants to be long gone. Some of the teams that are rumored, you got the Dallas Mavericks, the Houston Rockets. With all those young guys, I can't imagine what Jimmy Butler and Dylan Brooks would be like in practice. The Golden State Warriors teaming with Steph and the Phoenix Suns to potentially pair with the three of them. Maybe they move on from Beal if they get Jimmy Butler. I don't know how that one would work, but the Suns are one of the teams that Jimmy Butler could be interested in going to if he leaves Miami.
Man, I've really enjoyed watching Jimmy Butler the last 4 years, something like that, in the postseason. He's having a good year in the Heat, or, you know, having a decent season. I think that that would be hurtful to Spoelstra and company. I know that there have been bouts with him not being happy and him wanting out over the years. He is one tough dude, and he is a clutch performer and has been. I hope he stays in Miami. I've enjoyed watching him on really what is one of the two or three best coach teams in the league, a team that has consistently overachieved in the postseason in recent years, and a big part of that obviously has been him. I've been reading about that he wants out. We'll see whether or not they can get it done, but they have a decent team. They should be a playoff team in the East again. And then once you get to the postseason, for whatever reason, Spoelstra coaches them up. Butler comes through big. You know, Adebayo plays well. Tyler Hero plays well. And all of a sudden, they're beating somebody that you didn't think they should beat. Phoenix has lost a bunch of games recently without KD. But were you going to mention the in-season cup quarterfinal games last night?
Nope. But I was going to mention LeBron taking personal time away from the Lakers. The in-season cup last year was only relevant, I felt like, because Tyrese Halliburton happened to be doing some historic stuff. I didn't even know the semis were last night. I just know Steve
it wasn't
Kerr
the semis
upset.
Last night. There were two more quarterfinal games.
Oh, the quarterfinal. See, I don't know.
I'm not following it either, but there's a very controversial ending in the Rockets-Warriors game. Warriors were up one. Steph missed a long three. There was a loose ball, and it looked like, you know, either Houston got it and called a timeout, or it was a jump ball, and they called a loose ball foul on Golden State. It's a terrible call, and Kerr went off after the game, saying it was the worst call he's ever seen. And he said, you know, one of the reasons he's so upset is they really wanted to get to Vegas and play for the cup. And I'm like, wow, this seems to be important for the players and the teams here. So good for them. I find some of the games with some of the floor colors to be difficult to watch. I'm not going to lie to you. The Rockets floor was so red.
Oh,
it was
awful.
It was distracting. Hell of a game, bad ending. And the Warriors, you know, after their super hot start, have, I don't know, six or seven out of their last eight or nine they've lost. And you hit the nail on the head. The Rockets are certainly, for one of those young teams, I don't know if it's ahead of schedule, but, man, they are good. And that's one of those examples you look at and you say, you know, they were as bad as anybody's been, and they got it right on a couple of their picks. They added a couple of, you know, key pieces, and look at them now, you know, whatever they are, 18-8, something like that.
17-8. It could be the Wizards. Speaking of the Wizards, we have entered that point in the season where we are going to get all of the rumors. Is Kyle Kuzma going to get traded at the deadline? Shams had a report a couple days ago that said there were some teams interested in acquiring Kyle Kuzma.
The deadline's in February, right?
It is, but they need content.
No, when is the trade deadline? Did it move?
No, it's in February. They're doing this now because they need NBA content because Nobody cares about the cup, but we care about trades.
Yeah.
And I saw that trade thing and I was like, all right, here we go again. We're back on the roller coaster.
What was the trade that Shams had for Kuzma?
There was nothing set in stone. It was just that there were teams across the league that would be interested in Kyle Kuzma. It was literally as vague as
Kyle Kuzma can help somebody. He can definitely help somebody. I don't know if Jordan Poole can help anybody. But Kyle's got to be healthy. He's got to be available. He's missed games. But I've liked Kyle Kuzma since he's gotten here. I got to be totally honest. I've watched the least amount of Wizards basketball this year that I have in a long time. I watched some of those early games just to see what Sarr and Carrington and George and Koulibaly looked like. And I think Koulibaly really looks like the real deal. I mean, he looks like a number three on a really good team. And certainly the best defender.
Legit defender.
Maybe on a team like that. But, yeah. Do they play tonight?
No, they do not. I believe they play tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Also, tomorrow you get a little bit of a revitalized rivalry. You get Georgetown and Syracuse. Georgetown's been really, really good this year. So this should hopefully be a fun one.
Really, really good this year?
Yeah, well, didn't they start off like 7-1?
Yeah, but they lost to West Virginia pretty easily last week, right?
Yeah, Syracuse is not good. It's on Saturday. It's on Saturday, not Friday. But you get Saturday at 2:30, you get Georgetown and Syracuse up in Syracuse.
Look, Georgetown lost to West Virginia. I know West Virginia is decent this year. They beat somebody early. They beat Gonzaga early. So Georgetown lost by 13 against West Virginia. I didn't see any of the game. I don't know if it was a competitive game. I'm looking at the box score right now. They had a halftime lead, so good for them. Syracuse has struggled this year. Maryland plays them next weekend in Brooklyn. But Syracuse, they got rolled by somebody really good a few weeks ago. May have been Texas. Tennessee. Here it is. They lost by 26 against Tennessee.
Tennessee's pretty good.
Yeah, Tennessee's very good. They're number one in the country right now, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Did they move up to number one? I watched them against Miami this week on Tuesday. They were pretty good.
But that, you know, I love that about Georgetown and Syracuse is, you know, after Syracuse left to go to the ACC, they kept that thing going they renewed it a while back. They play this every year and it's big for both schools. I wish a lot of those, you know, old rivalries came together. Maryland and Georgetown are going to start playing next year. Maryland and Virginia are going to start playing next year as well in hoops. So, Georgetown, Syracuse, Saturday.
Saturday too. Georgetown's 7-2. For context, they were 9-23 last year. So they've
no. I understand. Yeah. No, I mean, look, Ed Cooley is a really good coach. He will get it done at Georgetown. What does get it done mean? I don't know. But they're not going to be dead last in the Big East this year. Didn't they finish dead last in the Big East last year?
Yeah, they were not. They were not very good. I don't know if they were dead last. I think DePaul was worse than them in the conference, but they were right there. I think they won two games all year, and I think
there was two. Was it the year before that they didn't win any, or that they won one?
Oh yeah, I think Ewing's last year it was a disaster, like an absolute disaster. They were Ewing's final year. They were 7-25 and 2-18 in the conference.
Oh, they were 2-18 that year too.
Yeah, they were 2-18 last year in the conference, but DePaul was 0-20. In the conference.
Marquette's really good in the Big East. And UConn's, you know, lost a bunch of games. Right now UConn's ranked 18th. They did fall to 24th. They beat Baylor in Texas last week, but they had lost those three games in Maui. The one in which Hurley blew up and had the tech in overtime against Memphis that blew the game. They lost to Colorado, and then they lost to somebody else. I'm forgetting who it is. But they did come back last week. I mean, I'm not going to worry about UConn because he'll have it figured out by the time you get to March. But that Big East, man, is good again. Marquette is loaded. Shaka's got that team playing really high-level basketball. They came here and won, and their only loss, they ended up losing to somebody that's really good, too. We talked about
they lost to, Marquette lost to Iowa State.
Iowa State.
That whole conference, everybody outside of Seton Hall is above 500. Even DePaul is 7-2.
Well, you usually get that this time of year, you know, with teams playing a lot of non-Power 5, you know, cupcakes.
DePaul did not get that last year.
I mean, when you look at the conference total win-loss records, a lot of the power conferences, they won't have a team, maybe one, with a losing record. You know, I'm just looking at check out the Big Ten right now. The Big Ten doesn't have one team with a losing record. In fact, nobody's even close. Well, Minnesota's 6-5.
I see Maryland at the top there. Top six.
Maryland is 1-1 in the conference, though.
They lost Purdue.
Yeah, they have some interesting games coming up. They play Syracuse next weekend in Brooklyn. You know, Maryland's got a huge New York alum base, but so does Syracuse. And then when they get back to conference play, they play back-to-back games. And this is what you're going to do now in the Big Ten. When you go out west, you're going to play two games in 3 nights, 4 nights. They play at Washington on January 2nd, and they play at Oregon on January 5th. And then they come back home and play UCLA. Oregon's ranked 12th, UCLA's 24th. I don't know if Washington's very good. Doesn't look like it. We'll see. But, man, those are conference games, Denton. At Washington and at Oregon for Maryland. It's crazy. I think they make another West Coast trip later. No, that's their only West Coast trip. And they get both games knocked out. So I wonder if that's going to be the plan.
Go
out west. When you're Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State, you know, when you're on the East Coast or close enough to it, you're probably going to make one, you know, trip through the former Pac-12 schools territory and knock out two games in 3 or 4 nights, and that'll be it. That's all they have this year. I don't know. Maybe it'll be more than that later. All right. We'll do our power rankings next, and then Matt Parris from New Orleans will join us to talk Saints. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. All right, I want to do 1 through 5, but then I want us to give our final four as we see it right now, the conference championship matchup games. We'll do that here over the final 4 weeks of the season. My top five in order, I'm going to stick with Detroit. I'm going to go Philly, KC. I mean, KC's 12-1. They just keep winning, but God, it's not overly impressive. I'm going to go Buffalo even after a loss at 4. And then I think I had Pittsburgh at 5 last week. I'm going to keep Pittsburgh at 5, even though I do think, you know, ending Eagles, Ravens, Chiefs, Bengals could cost them the division. I think Baltimore still has a good chance to win the AFC North. Baltimore's schedule isn't anywhere near what Pittsburgh's is. They've got the Giants, then they have Pittsburgh. They play Houston on the road. They finish with Cleveland at home. But I'm, for now, based on the way they're playing, going to keep Pittsburgh in at number 5. Who are your top 5?
So our 5 are very, very similar. I got Detroit 1. I'm going to put Kansas City at 2, even though they're not playing sensationally. I'm going to keep them at 2 and move Philadelphia down to 3 just because they have some issues internally, and that is going to factor into my rankings. And then I have Buffalo at 4. Where we differ is that I'm going to put Minnesota at 5. I think Darnold is playing really, really well, but defensively, I'm still very, very impressed by what they have going on, and I think they're kind of coming to fruition on the offensive side and realizing that there's not a lot of teams in the league that can defend both Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson. I mean, they had that one particular Falcon player in an absolute blender, just completely lost in the sauce while trying. I mean, that dude, look, he might as well just run off the field on that Justin Jefferson touchdown. So I got Minnesota at number 5. I think I had Los Angeles there last week, but I put the Vikings there now.
All right, let's do our championship game matchups as we see them. You got to think a little bit, too, about the bracket and the way it lays out. Because, like, part of me was thinking, Detroit Green Bay is my NFC title game, but Green Bay is likely going to be the 6th seed or the 7th seed, which means if they win in that first round, let's just say they're the 6 and they beat Seattle, then their next game is going to be against Detroit, you know, in the divisional round, if Detroit's the 1 seed. So I'm going to go with a stunning NFC title game. Green Bay at Philly. As the NFC title game, Green Bay shocks Detroit in the divisional round in a 6-1 matchup. They beat Seattle or whomever the NFC West winner is, and then they beat Detroit. There's something about the way Green Bay played last Thursday night that I like. And so it's Green Bay against Philly in the NFC. What about you in the NFC?
In the NFC, I'm going to go a little bit more chalky. And I think we get Detroit and Philadelphia. They've been the two best teams for the entire season in the conference. And I think we get to see them in Detroit. So not at Philly. I think Detroit gets the 1 seed. In Detroit, I think we see the Eagles and the Lions.
Okay. Let's go AFC. Knowing that the Chiefs are going to be at Arrowhead. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to guess right now, I actually think Baltimore's got a decent chance to come back and win the AFC North because of Pittsburgh's schedule the rest of the way. But Baltimore would be the 3. They'd have to play at Buffalo in a divisional round game if they got there. I'm just going to go total chalk in the AFC and predict Buffalo at Arrowhead for the AFC title.
We are in different paths here. I'm not going chalk here.
I know you want Chargers.
I'm going to go Chargers at Buffalo. I think the Chargers, they're going to win their first matchup. They would see the Chiefs for a third time, second time at Arrowhead. I thought they were the better team in the second half of the most recent matchup. They just have to stay consistent on what their identity is offensively for the entire game against Kansas City, not try and get too cute. But I like the Chargers to go on the road to Buffalo in the AFC, surprise some folks, take down the Chiefs. But I think I like the Chargers and the Bills out of the AFC.
I mean, keep in mind, let's just say the Chargers end up with, say, the 6th seed, okay, and not the 5. The 5 is going to be crucial in the AFC because you go to Houston.
Yeah.
The 6 means you go to the AFC North winner. It may mean you go to Buffalo. I mean, here's the thing. The AFC North winner, if it's Pittsburgh, may finish with the 2 seed. Remember, they play the Chiefs. They may think they have a shot at the 1 seed. Big Tony does. But let's just say the Chargers are the 6 and that the AFC North winner is the 3. That means they got to go to Pittsburgh or to Baltimore and win. And then, just so you know, you'd probably get them against the Chiefs in the divisional round.
That was the plan, yes.
Yeah.
Which is how they would, that's how I would have them match up with
right,
Buffalo.
Matching up with Buffalo.
Yeah.
But what if Buffalo loses to Detroit this weekend? Let's just say they lose to Detroit and they've got a 4th loss. All right. And Pittsburgh does really well against this schedule the rest of the way. And they end up with, you know, 3 losses or 4 losses. I'm trying to see who would win the tiebreaker
right now,
between
if they have the same number of wins and losses, right now Buffalo wins that tiebreaker based off of strength of victory. Now, obviously, that can change. But if Buffalo beats Detroit, that is effectively done. You're not going to get a better victory at that point in the tiebreaker scheme than that one.
You went down to strength of victory, you did, huh?
No, that's what the reason is on ESPN.com. I didn't dive deep into that. I dove deep into that for our tiebreakers, which I put up on YouTube today, Denton's office. I dove deep into ours. I didn't dive deep.
I mean, let me just tell you that is like that's like criteria number 4 or 5.
Yes,
because with 2 non-division teams, it's head to head, and Pittsburgh and Buffalo don't play each other. It's then conference record, then it's common games, and then it's either what did you say, strength of victory,
and then
it's either that or strength of schedule. So
schedule is after, strength of victory is first.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so strength of victory comes first. So they're down to number 4 on the list to determine that. Wow.
I'm trying to find some of the common games that they have played. The Jets are one of them, obviously, because the Jets are in the Bills division. But it doesn't really look like there's a ton of other common games, which is actually kind of surprising.
Well, Pittsburgh does play Kansas City, and they do play
Baltimore
here coming up. So
right.
Those would be 2 teams that they did play. and Buffalo lost to Baltimore and beat Kansas City. So it'll really determine on, I mean, the conference record is tied right now. That's why they got to strength of victory or common games. It's if Buffalo loses once more and Pittsburgh, let's say, loses once more, and it comes down to conference record, if Buffalo's loss is to Detroit and Pittsburgh's is to an AFC team, Buffalo would win on conference record on number two.
Yes. Yeah.
Boy, this is
This weekend is going to be with the Steelers at the Eagles, then Buffalo at Buffalo and Detroit. Like, that's going to be a big games.
Sunday late window, as good as it gets, you know. I mean, that you got two games that are just incredible. All right, Matt Paris covers the Saints for the Times-Picayune and the Advocate in New Orleans. He'll join us next. Matt Paris covered our team for a few years for the Washington Times, but he left the Times before the season started, headed down to New Orleans, where he is now covering the New Orleans Saints as a beat reporter for the Times-Picayune and the Advocate. You can follow Matt on X at Matthew_Paris. You left at the worst possible time. You missed a great season.
Yeah, so it goes. I actually left in the middle of last year. So
no, that's true. That. Yeah.
Yes. So, but no, it has been very interesting watching from afar. I kind of can't believe it, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us feel that way. It's been really fun, though. So what is Washington going to get in New Orleans? Like, who's actually going to be able to dress for the game?
Well, in terms of quarterbacks, they're trying to keep it as tight-lipped as possible. I mean, they've kind of left open the possibility that Derek Carr might be able to play without practice, but that just seems like they're playing mind games with that. It's probably going to be Jake Haener. That would be my educated guess. They went to Spencer Rattler, their fifth-round rookie, earlier in the year. He looked a bit overwhelmed. Haener's another young guy that they probably need to get a look at here as the season winds down and their season is pretty much lost. So my guess it would be Haener, but they haven't said anything official in that regard.
You know, the season wouldn't have been lost had they beaten the Rams, and they had a 6-0 lead at halftime on a team that exploded Sunday against the Bills for 44. If they somehow won that game, and I know they were down there threatening late because I bet the Saints plus the 3.5 and was hoping for a late score there. They've obviously been playing better. Are they decent defensively, just in looking at the Rams and what they did against Buffalo and what they couldn't do against New Orleans? It would indicate that defensively they're playing pretty well.
Yes and no. I mean, the Rams' performance was much better than what they had been. But this is still, I mean, the defense, I think, has been maybe one of the most, I think it's the most disappointing aspect of this year's team. I mean, you look at that 7-game losing streak, the defense fell off a cliff. They are relying on a lot of older players who haven't had the years that maybe they are accustomed to. And so, you know, the secondary has been a little bit better. Alante Taylor has played better after some early game struggles, being that number one cornerback after Marshon Lattimore is traded. Kool-Aid McKinstry, their second round rookie, is a nice player, but this is a defense that can give up real big plays. Their explosive play rate is not good. You can run on them. I think that's going to be a key for Washington on Sunday, is because Saints have one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. And so I do think this is a favorable matchup for Washington, even though New Orleans is playing a bit better of late.
So flipping it to the other side of the ball, Washington has struggled to stop the run this year. You know, when teams have been, when the game's been in context in terms of score, you know, when it's gotten out of hand like it did, you know, against Tennessee or Carolina, there nobody tried to run. But Alvin Kamara, Clint Kubiak, zone run scheme, Shanahan scheme. I know that they've been just ravaged with injuries at wide receiver and now quarterback, and we'll get back to Jake Haener here in a moment. But do you think New Orleans, the way they hang in there, is to run the football?
Yeah, I mean, if they win this game, that's going to have to be how they do it. I mean, Alvin Kamara has had a really nice season. He went into the year with kind of an unsettled contract situation. missed a mandatory minicamp practice over kind of his unhappiness with that, but has really kind of bought in and looked much better than he had in recent years. He looked a bit to be on the decline, but turned that around. They paid him again, and he's still been solid after that. I mean, I think this team really benefits Kamara and that sort of thing. And then, you know, the one thing I would say about the running game, as good as it's been, it is much, much better with Taysom Hill in the lineup, and he suffered a season-ending ACL injury a few weeks ago. So that's a tough blow for them, and it wasn't very good against the Giants, which was one of the weird things about that game. And so we'll see, but that's been the meat and potatoes of their offense this year.
You know, the Giants actually, I think, are capable from a run-stopping standpoint. They haven't done it consistently, but they certainly, you know, with some of the players they have in that front seven, have been capable at times. So let's get, well, real quickly, Valdez-Scantling came in, you know, in that first game against the Falcons and caught like two bombs when they beat Atlanta a few weeks ago. So is that the only threat other than Alvin Kamara out of the backfield or even split out as a wide receiver? Is Valdez-Scantling the only other receiver that you have to worry about?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm not gonna try and sell you on Kevin Austin, who spent time in the UFL. I mean, he's a nice player. He's been a nice surprise for them. Recently signed to the active roster. Bub Means, their fifth-round rookie, might come back this week. He didn't practice I think he was limited yesterday. He's been on injured reserve. That would give them a boost. But Chris Olave, he's been on injured reserve with a concussion, technically eligible to come back, but that's not looking like the case, at least this week. So, yeah, MVS is definitely the guy that Washington is going to have to pay attention to.
I mean, you go back to the beginning of the season, Matt, when they erupted for 91 points in the first two games, and Rashid Shaheed looked like one of the best deep threats in the game. Olave looked like he was, you know, a borderline elite at receiver. I mean, is it just easy to say they actually had a really good team, but they just lost most of their really good players?
Yeah, I think that's the... That's the reason why I think that the losing streak got what it did. But at the same time, there were some problems with the defense. You know, that defense was mostly healthy during that losing streak. I mean, they lost Pete Warner for a couple games. Their starting linebacker, Will Harris, their starting safety, went on injured reserve. But besides that, it was a mostly healthy group. And, you know, that was supposed to be Dennis Allen's forte. And I think part of what went wrong this season is, you know, the players did kind of check out on Allen. And that's why he was ultimately fired. You know, Dan Rizzi has come in, been promoted from special teams coordinator to be the interim, and they've really rallied around him. So, you know, a lot of things have gone wrong this season. It's not just the injuries, but that has been a key component.
All right, so you think it'll be Jake Haener? You think there's no chance that it's Carr?
Yeah, I would be very, very surprised if it's Carr.
Is it a fractured hand, non-throwing hand?
Yeah, a fractured non-throwing, that was the report. The Saints said it was a little bit false, the report, but I think if you read the language there, I mean, Rappaport said it was almost certainly season-ending initially and then cleaned it up by saying potentially, but they disputed the timeline of it. They're not going to put him on injured reserve, so they're really leaving the door open for him to return at some point. But if he misses a week or two, I don't think that would be surprising. So, I mean, yeah. Also, he has a concussion, so he still has to clear concussion protocol. He had two concussions.
Did he have
last.
The concussion on that same play where he went airborne for some unknown reason?
Yeah. So he's also in concussion protocol. So I don't even know if he'll clear that in time. I mean, it's not just the hand that they have to worry about. It's the protocol as well.
I'm sure on one hand they're thinking that, you know, with this new interim coach, and they've rallied around him, and they won three out of the last four, and the one they lost was a close one to the Rams, that, hey, man, if we beat Washington, we're still mathematically alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is. I mean, the NFC South, honestly, man, it reminds me of covering the NFC East back in 2020.
2020, where, you know, yeah.
Yeah, the Commanders won 7-9 division, but the problem New Orleans is staring down is they've played most of their division games and they fell into a hole that way. I mean, they lost the tiebreaker to Atlanta. But they split games with Atlanta, but they lost that one early on. They lost to Carolina. They've lost to Tampa Bay. And so they just don't have a favorable division record in terms of – so I think for them, they would pretty much have to win out. I mean, I think their playoff odds are less than 1% at this point, but
right.
They are still mathematically alive.
All right. So the difference between Haener and Spencer Rattler, if we get Haener, what do we see? If we get Rattler, what do we see?
Yeah, they're similar quarterbacks. Rattler is definitely the more mobile one of them. When Rattler was in the game, when he played the three games, they really liked to roll him out on bootlegs and those sorts of things, and was really effective for a half against Tampa Bay, and then defenses kind of figured it out, and that was kind of the end of their offense. Haener is a more steady guy. I think a little bit more pocket presence. His completion percentage hasn't been all that impressive in the seven games he's appeared in this season, but a lot of them have been in cleanup spots. Both competitive, both really kind of fiery guys on the field, especially Haener. But they're both really kind of young and unpolished in that sense. You know, they were mid-round picks for a reason.
Tell everybody how Chase Young's played.
You know, man, I was looking at the numbers today, and it's always the thing with him, right, is the pressures are there, the sacks aren't. And in terms of his pressure rate, he's having the best pressure rate of his career. It's at 17%. He's getting to the quarterback. He's actually played maybe the best game of his career last Sunday against the Giants. I mean, he had 10 pressures. Six of them were in under 2.5 seconds, but he didn't have a sack again. So, you know, that's kind of been the rub on him. But I think he's been fine for them. You know, he hasn't been that ultimate difference maker that people expected coming out of his career. I don't know necessarily if he's rebuilt his stock in the way that, you know, when he signed a one-year deal with New Orleans this offseason that I was maybe hoping for, but he's been fine, and he's bought into, you know, that a lot of plays, a lot of the conversation around Chase, especially in Washington, was the effort and the lack of discipline, those sorts of things. That hasn't been as much of a problem here.
Marshawn Lattimore, and we're talking to Matt Paris. Matt was, of course, in town for several years covering the Skins for the Washington Times, and he now covers the Saints in New Orleans. The Lattimore trade, it seems like a long time ago. He's yet to make his debut, but it looks like it will come this weekend. I don't think we had you on right after the trade, but just curious as to what you thought of the trade, good, bad, from a New Orleans perspective, and then if he does make his debut this weekend, what you think we will see from him.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good deal for New Orleans. I was surprised that they were able to get that volume of return. I mean, he was their one trade asset, so I get why they shopped him. They explored moving him in the offseason as well. They kind of agreed that, all right, let's not do it. The offers I think they received, or the interest, wasn't what they wanted. Mickey Loomis said they weren't going to give away good players for free, so they kept on to him. But as the season went south, it made sense to move on. And so as for what Washington is getting, I mean, he's a great man corner, rises up to the big games. And I think that's what's going to be interesting about Sunday's game is that, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling isn't your biggest name receiver. So how does Lattimore kind of rise to that matchup? But at the same time, it's his former team. He'll probably be pretty amped to go in his debut. And he's a guy that rises to the biggest moments. So I think he'll be pretty fired up.
Matt, thanks. Good to hear from you, and I appreciate you doing this. Hope it's going well for you down there.
Yeah, thanks. Hope you're all well as well.
Yep. Matt Paris, everybody, covering the Saints. Yeah, I think the key to the game is exactly what he said, Denton. Alvin Kamara is really good, and the Clint Kubiak system is the Shanahan system. Clint was obviously in, in San Francisco last year, but his father, Gary Kubiak, a player for the Broncos when Mike coached there, coached Houston. Kyle was his offensive coordinator, coached Denver to a Super Bowl win in 2015 with that great defense led by Von Miller in Peyton's final year. And that's, you know, in terms of one cut, you know, everybody's moving sideways, and then that one cut and upfield, this dude is legit. I can't imagine Washington isn't going to load the box and dare Jake Haener to beat him, or Spencer Rattler if it's him, to beat them with his arm, with really their best receiver is Alvin Kamara. That's the player you have to be concerned about. He is that good, and he can impact a game and keep a game tight, and, you know, then anything can happen. And they have some mojo, you know, under this new interim coach, Rizzi. They've won three of four, and the game they lost, they were in the game. They had shut the Rams out in the first half. Washington remains 7.5-point favorites Sunday against New Orleans. Tomorrow, we will have a total preview of that game, predictions on that game, and a lot more. Have a good day. Chris Russell is next.